You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome one, welcome all to volume, I'm not sure what, of the NFC East mixtape, aka the NFC Beast mixtape. You can listen to this on any one of SB Nation's NFC East blog podcast networks. That is Bleeding Green Nation for Philadelphia Eagles content, Blog of the Boys for Dallas Cowboys content, Big Blue View for New York Giants content, or Hogs Haven for Washington Commanders content. You can also watch this on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel or the Blog and the Boys YouTube channel. You can see or hear our wonderful voices. He is Brandon Lee Gowden from Bleeding Green Nation. I am RJ Ochoa from Blog and the Boys. Brandon, welcome to December, effectively, as far as the NFL is concerned.
It's still November 29th as we're recording this. So
the next NFL quite. Game is in December, though. That's kind of where I'm coming from.
Today is November. 86 is the number you were looking for the episode. You can 86
gross
your intro.
Number. There's no great player in NFL history that wore 86.
Zach Ertz.
I mean, I was going to say Hines Ward. So I guess both Pennsylvania people. But, you know, at least Hines Ward was the MVP of his Super Bowl win. So,
I mean, Zach Ertz caught the game-winning touchdown, but no big deal.
It was kind of a fumble, really, for being
it honest. Was not. I mean, he caught it, though, too. Also, it was not. The ball was dead as soon as he passed the goal line. Anyway, RJ, we have a Apple Podcast five-star review from Don Giggs.
Okay. What network is this on? Because I have one at Blog on the Boys. Okay, so you have a BGN, I have a BTB one. Go for it.
It's pretty long, so I don't know if I want to read the whole thing.
Sorry, Don.
Well, I mean, it's not about Don. It's just that I want to respect the listener's time here, especially if we have two reviews. But I'm just going to get into it.
Mine is very short.
I'm reading this cold, by the way. I just opened this. I have no idea what this says. It could be really bad. It could be great. Title, thank you, RJ. First longtime listener of Bleeding Green Nation and the NFC mixtape. He said incorrect. It's the NFC East
common
mixtape.
Error. A lot of people make that mistake, including
I say it wrong. We all say it wrong, so yeah. It's fine. No big deal. It happens. Great pods. Go Birds. Second, as a Birds fan of 35 years, I want to thank RJ. Sincerely, the latest pod has helped me get back to truly loathing Cowboys fans for what they are in the depths of their souls. This season has been a challenge for me. RJ has been pretty subjective, and it's made me feel very uncomfortable. I do not like to look at a Cowboys fan and say, hey, that guy's not so bad. I like my Cowboys fans to bring out the worst in me. I like my Cowboys fans to remind me of my college girlfriend. Yikes. Delusional and annoying. It keeps balance in the force. So thank you, RJ. Your delusional bravado is classic Cowboys fan. We've seen this movie before, and it's not a good movie. It's Sharknado 4. It's Troll 2. It's anything with Kirk Cameron. Jeez.
Wow.
I'm looking forward to Kirk Cameron catching a stray. I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. Please maintain this energy when the Eagles win the division and go farther than the Cowboys in the playoffs yet again, as they've done time and time again since the last time Dallas even sniffed the NFC Championship game. Best love to you both.
So I really don't understand. Maybe you read it too, I guess. Am I being thanked for being an obnoxious Cowboys fan or for not being an obnoxious fan and therefore inciting what he wishes was an obnoxious fan?
I think he is happy that you have taken a turn into being such a homer and so delusional that he can hate you again, because there was a point where he found you likable. This is a strong review by Don Giggs, and a fan for 35 years, you know, big respect here.
I will say, just Don's being a little bit redundant at the very end, like, oh, the Eagles have gone farther than the Cowboys ever since the Cowboys sniffed the NFC Championship. Yeah, like, if they haven't been to the NFC Championship game, like, obviously, you know, the Eagles are going farther. Like, you know, that's all I'm saying. That's a redundant point. You know, let's be more matter of fact. Like the review that came to us from Jabardzi on the Blog and the Boys Network. This is also an Eagles fan, 5-star rating. It is titled literally Eagles fan here. And it just says, and I'm going to read it verbatim, please tell BLG that Sue is a direct replacement for Barnett as the quote, it's always him guy. Mm. So I don't know what that means.
Like a dirty player, like going to have a dumb penalty. I think Ndamukong Sue is kind
Derek of Barnett had the game winning play in the Super Bowl. What do, now who's catching strays?
I mean, Sue was, I think, shed that label. You know, like, that was a long time ago when he kind of had, you know, like, dirty player, I feel like, for the most part, at least.
Two things on Sue as we get ready to start our assessment of the NFC East. Again, the NFC Beast. One, Sue has a checkered past as far as that kind of stuff, but he is way too cool of a player to wear number 74. I recognize that not a lot of options available, but tough scene. Like, just not a good look.
Don't disagree. Not good on the jersey number analytics, but yeah, there's just not a lot of options, obviously, at this point in the season.
Yeah, so. Not his fault. Second thing, I can tell this story later. I can tell it now if you'd like. I once won a camera from Ndamukong Suh. Have I ever told you this before? Yeah, like a digital camera. This was like 2011, so digital cameras were a lot cooler. Like, man, talk about catching strays. Digital cameras are now like kind of irrelevant. You know, like, do you know anybody who uses a digital camera instead of their phone?
Not really.
I used to think there was no way that we would just, like, you know, that phone quality images would replace cameras. But here we are. The long story shortened is way back in the beginning days of Twitter, like 2010, 2011-ish, he did a partnership, like, you know, way before, like, ads were a thing with, I think, Canon. And he gave away 5 cameras on Twitter, and I won one. So I had a camera that Ndamukong Suh sent me. So friend of the pod, you could say, like, in a very loose loose way.
There you go. Exciting.
Okay. Shout out to me.
You know, RJ, I have a gripe with people to get off my chest. It's going to lead us into what we're actually talking about on this episode,
okay?
Which is the best division in the NFL. I mean, everyone is using this term, NFC Beast, and no one is crediting us. I want everyone to call out anytime someone is using that term. And not crediting us, because we invented that.
I agree. I mean, I think similarly, the way people are saying it's the NFC Beast, they're saying, like, the inverse of that is, well, it's not the NFC Least anymore. Also something that is intellectual property of ours. It does kind of feel like you're way more into music than I am. So, like,
you're a big music reference guy on the Monday Football Monday episode. Sometimes you'll just drop one in there that surprises me. I'm like, oh, I know.
Well, I mean,
that band or song.
I'm a citizen of the world. You know, I like to be a citizen of a lot of things, but you are, like, you go to concerts, like, you know, I feel like you're more into some, like, you're more strong in conviction in music than I am. And so what this kind of feels like is, and I'm sure you've dealt with this before, it's like when we liked this band. You know what I mean? And now they've gone mainstream, and now everybody's like, this band is awesome. We're like, wait a minute. No, like, chill out. This was our thing. You know, quit ruining, you know, we were having fun. They were playing these local bars or whatever, and we were just kind of here enjoying and eating good food and drinking good drinks. Like, now you're here ruining it. Like, now you're ticket mastering this thing.
I'm not a big fan of gatekeeping, which is kind of what you're talking about here. Right. I just think, like, you just have to acknowledge. So it's not gatekeeping to me if you at least just acknowledge, you know, where this came from. Like, oh, this person was really big onto this thing before everyone else was. It's not about, like, you have to bow down to them and give them all the credit, or you can't enjoy it. But, like, let's just be transparent. Let's be honest here. Let's just, you know, let's just not, let's call it for like it is. Let's not pretend
that
we didn't invent this.
You know why we deserve credit, Brandon? We invented the NFC's mixtape literally the season that the division was won with a 7-9 record. All right. So if anyone's going to question our legitimacy here, they can step. All right. You know, you and I, we were here, Blink 182. All right. We loved it before Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. Everything was great around here. And then all the mainstream showed up. And just now, I mean, the show's still great. The music's still awesome. But, like, now there's a lot of people. You know, it's just, you know, chill out. Let us have our space again.
Let's get into it, RJ.
What version of the CD did you have, that album?
What do you mean? Like, the color or whatever?
Yeah, like the color and the logo. I had the jacket.
I didn't have the actual copy. So this is going back to, like, high school. My friend, like, burned me CDs of a couple of their albums.
So it's like the silver, like, CDR.
Yeah, like, and know. He wrote, like, on Sharpie, you know, the name on the, yep.
Wow. Brandon just confessed to doing something illegal.
I mean, I didn't do it. I'm not the one who burned it. He gave them to me.
Wow. I supported the industry, to be very clear. All right, let's talk. We, as always, go in divisional standing order. The Philadelphia Eagles, currently 10-1, best record in the NFL, obviously best record in the NFC East. 40-33 victory over the Green Bay Packers. Do you want me to go first? Do you want to go first? I think you'll be interested in my thoughts, but it's up to you.
Let's hear your take.
So I locked up the Packers.
Cowboys couldn't beat.
I locked up the Packers on our other show that we do together. Everybody should go subscribe to and listen to the SB Nation NFL show. You can listen to Brandon and I together every Friday with, I was going to say our good friend, but you know, our colleague, Rob Stats Guerrera. And I locked up the Packers at +7. So it was a push, not a win, not a loss. A loss as far as making you money is concerned. Right. But I did feel like the Packers would play them tough. And I did feel for a little bit of this game, like a handful of moments, like, holy crap, that's prime Aaron Rodgers. Like there were some throws where you're like, that is Aaron Rodgers. Now that dissipated very quickly. The Jordan Love stuff at the end was kind of cute. This was a really emphatic answer to the 2-week sputter by the Eagles. Still kind of a you know, what's going on here? My big takeaway, like if you're an Eagles fan, is that this is not sustainable. Like you can't have Jalen Hurts run for 1,000 yards every single game. I mean, and that would be the concern. I mean, I think he's answered that call many times. So I don't know that there's like reason to doubt, but the force with which this game was won probably will not happen again just because that's the way the NFL works. But it was a really impressive shutdown of the weird energy surrounding the team. But stock down for Mike Tirico, who gave praise to Nick Sirianni for cussing out Colts fans. That's all I have to say.
Okay. It was a weird game in the sense that like they start 13-0. It's like, oh, it's gonna be a blowout. This looks like, you know,
back on track. It was a weird first quarter. That was the weirdest first quarter I've ever seen.
So many points scored so quickly, and then the Eagles go down, and it's like, oh no, like this is the same team that is gonna fall apart. And the last couple of weeks are certainly more troubling than maybe we thought. But then they pull ahead again. So really strange game. Aaron Rodgers comes out, as you mentioned. I think they don't need to win like that is the key thing, though. It's not like Jalen Hurts needs to run for 1 billion yards from the end to win, unlike last year when that was the case. And I think he is kind of being maybe not credited enough just from a standpoint of everyone's talking about the rushing, and that was obviously a big deal and a big story. But I don't think he was rushing in this game just as like a crutch because he couldn't throw. He made some really good at the back shoulder touchdown throw to Quez Watkins was like a really nice throw. He made some really important key throws in this game. So I don't think, you know, it was that he couldn't throw. I think part of it is just the Packers run defense. Clearly not very good.
Yeah, the game didn't call for it as much. Right.
They didn't need to throw. They're just dominating on the ground. Anytime they ran the ball, they're getting incredible push up front with that offensive line. So, you know, I think that's the story of the game. The defense had like a weird game in that they gave up 33 points, which is almost twice the amount the Packers have had in terms of their high watermark this year on the road. The previous was 17, but there were some short fields in here. Special teams was an issue. The Eagles, who is allowing, first of all, who is like even returning kicks anymore in the NFL? And then which special teams units are allowing teams to like regularly get 50 yards? They had 50-plus yard returns in this game, so that was insane. And then, you know, there was a turnover on downs, which is kind of a weird situation because the Eagles are so good in those spots. And then there was the A.J. Brown fumble, a second in 2 weeks, which
that's,
is just...
That's a little kind of... That's the kind of stuff that, like, wasn't happening, right? That's like, now it's like, you know, call it regression, call it variance, whatever. Those weird whoopsie-daisy things that are generally somewhat common for NFL teams, the Eagles had avoided, and they won this game in spite of them. But like those things are starting to rear their ugly head just a little bit.
But it is weird. Like that's not, I'm not worried about AJ Brown continuing to fumble. He had zero fumbles since 2020 prior to last week. You know, he has two in the last 2 weeks. And I'm sure you saw he apparently was dealing like some real crazy stomach bug that caused him to lose 7 pounds. And he had like this like, gross looking bloodshot eye after the game, because apparently he was like throwing up so much that caused that. So, you know, there's some weird stuff in there, and he kind of did redeem himself with a big third down catch at one point in the touchdown catch. So, you know, not really worried about him long-term, but certainly just kind of a weird stretch here for him. But overall, they're 10-1. They covered the spread as it was earlier in the day. It was 6.5.
Yeah, I caught it at 7 when I locked it, right.
I do my weekly picks against the spread column on Sunday morning, and it was 6.5 at that point. So they did cover the spread from that standpoint. And I think I looked before the game, right before the game too, it was still 6.5. So they held on. They never really like put the game away like you wanted them to. Like the Packers like kind of crept back into it. And then
The Jordan Love touch to Christian Watson touchdown was really weird. Like it was actually kind of like, whoa, happened.
Okay, the game's over. The backup quarterback is in. And I think part of that was, you know, so if you didn't know, Reed Blankenship, an undrafted rookie free agent, the only undrafted rookie free agent to ever pick off Aaron Rodgers, which by the way, that was an incredible play.
It really was
that pick. I was like, that was like almost like Malcolm Butler on Russell Wilson. Not quite, you know, the same impact and high, but like just that like shocking, just jumped a route, exploded, caught the ball. Crazy. But yeah, he certainly, you know, he's an undrafted rookie free agent for a reason. You know, he blew his assignment or took a poor angle, whatever you want to call it. And Christian Watson is really fast. He's like a 4.3 guy. Reed Blankenship is a 4.55 guy. So it's kind of a big difference there. And that's another big story, RJ, coming out of this game is, you know, the Eagles had another massive injury. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson goes down, lacerated kidney.
Dude, that sounds awful. Like, that is so terrible.
I remember Miles Austin, your boy.
That's right.
Talking about how he had one of those with the Browns and he was just like urinating blood. Not a great situation.
That's a hard thing to transition off of. You said Miles. I don't think that Miles Sanders got like any love for his game because Jalen Hurts got all the love. And I remember once upon a time, I argued for Miles Sanders being one of the more underrated players in the NFC East. I got a lot of blowback. Got a lot of blowback from Eagles fans. Miles Sanders sucks. Miles Sanders terrible. Not that this is important, but just for context, like what my perception was, at the end of the afternoon games, I was looking at a situation where I was going to be up 15 points in my fantasy league of record with just Miles Sanders going up against AJ Brown and the Eagles defense. I also had Josh Jacobs, who gave me that comfortable lead based off the game winner. But then like Miles, like whatever teeny tiny question I had, Miles Sanders vanquished very early on. Again, not getting enough credit Miles Sanders is.
I think this was his best game. Like, I mean, obviously it was from a standpoint of his actual highest rushing total, but just in the way he ran, like this was not the Miles Sanders we've necessarily seen all season. Not to say he's had a bad year, but he was like making guys miss. He was like running through contact. Like that's not, I'd like to see more of this Miles Sanders. It's kind of funny that even in his best game, he still wasn't the leading rusher because Jalen Hurts outrushed him, which that's not like this big indictment, but it is kind of funny that was the case. So yeah, he was huge as well. And Packers run defense certainly had a lot to do with that, but he took advantage.
I think, you know, the Packers still, like, even though as bad as they are, they have this, like, well, it's Aaron Rodgers, blah, blah, blah. Like, they have this image that, like, nobody wants to let go of. So I think anybody that, you know, was truly objective this time a week ago would have said if the Eagles are going to drop one of their two games, their upcoming two games, it would have been to the Titans over the Packers, right? Even though the, like, image and presentation of the Packers is what it is. And so, like, this Packers game actually makes me super interested in, like, as much more than I already was so in this Eagles-Titans game. Because I saw you tweet about this during the game. Like, why are you not handing the ball off to A.J. Dillon every single play? Like at this point in time. Like, I mean,
I tweeted that at one point.
Thank you for listening. I literally just said the words that I saw that you tweeted that. So, you know, good job, us. I mean, he was dominating, like owning. Like, I mean, you talked about, like, the way Miles Sanders was running. It was, people use the phrase, like, shot out of a cannon. It was literally, like, shot out of a cannon and, like, bowling over Eagles defenders. So it made me think, like, man, what is Derrick Henry going to do to this team? And the Titans are just a much more efficient team. And this like sounds hot takey, but it's just the reality. Like, Ryan Tannehill is not going to make the mistakes that Aaron Rodgers is making these days. I mean, unless Aaron Rodgers is playing the Cowboys, of course. So I'm interested. I'm interested to see that matchup. This was a very weird game that the Eagles won to get to 10-1. And correct me if I'm wrong, a win over the Titans clinches a playoff berth for the Eagles this week.
It's multiple things need to happen. It's like, okay, Eagles need to beat the Titans, and then the Giants need to win over the Commanders, and then the Dolphins need to beat the San Francisco 49ers, and then the Rams need to beat the, where are the Rams playing? Rams need to beat someone. I think, I forget, but they're probably not going to beat them because the Rams are terrible. Let me look that up really quick. The Rams are playing the Seahawks. Yeah, probably not going to happen.
Okay. So the Eagles jumped up from fourth in team DVOA last week to third. Dallas fell from second to fourth. I thought this was strange because, like, when I first like glanced at this, I was like, who jumped up? Like, I kind of like over glossed it. Did you see who jumped ahead of both of them?
Dolphins?
The Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens. The Bills are currently number one in total team DVOA. The Ravens are second after being third a week ago. So the Cowboys fell from second to fourth. The Eagles jumped from fourth to third. The Ravens improved from third to second. How?
I mean, Ravens have lost a lot of close games. So, like, I get that
based off the last week, because that's, you know, this is improvement. Like, you know, it's strange.
I'm not saying it makes perfect sense, but I am saying, like, I get the bigger picture concept of Ravens might be a little bit better than their record indicates. Although, you know, quarterback hasn't been playing well for a while. So that's a problem.
I have reached the point where I know we've had a lot of fun, but I am very confident that the NFC winner is the Cowboys or the Eagles. Like, I mean, the only other team I would give, like, any sort of, like, I wouldn't say odds to, but, like, likelihood or whatever is the 49ers.
I don't think they can, though, right? Like, just where they are.
I'm saying to win the NFC, not the number one seed. I'm sorry, like to win the NFC as a whole, not to, you know, like be the number one seed in the conference. But
well, the 49ers absolutely can. Yeah, they, I mean, it's hard to doubt the team that has made the championship game two of the last 3 years to say they can't do it. Yeah.
If you are curious, though, so 538 has the Eagles' chances of getting the one seed at 62%. And so we're talking just NFC teams. Dallas is next at 18. Minnesota's next at 17. But that's obviously based on, like, their position at the moment. The 49ers are next at 2%. So huge drop off at that point in time. But this is kind of what I was talking about, like 538's chances of winning the Super Bowl. So the Chiefs lead the way at 23%. The Cowboys just ahead of the Eagles, 15 to 14%. The Niners are the, well, I think some of it, so these are quarterback adjusted rankings, right? So 538 clearly values Dak over more than Jalen Hurts, you know. Again, like just based on this is like, I know this upsets a lot of Eagles fans. This is their methodology. It's not mine. I'm having fun with it, but it is theirs. The 49ers are the NFC team. So Dallas is 15% as far as just NFC teams. Philadelphia, 14. San Francisco, 7. Minnesota, 6. And the next NFC team is the Bucks with a 1% chance. That's what I'm saying. Like the Super Bowl representative for the NFC, I'm 75 to 80% confident is going to be Dallas or Philadelphia.
I mean, yeah. Them or the 49ers. It's
this feels like you mentioned San Francisco. This feels 2019 San Francisco Seattle-ish. And remember that game, that division, and therefore the one seed came down to week, what was 17 at the time. That game in Seattle that San Francisco won by a yard. That gave them the one seed, which was significant because they, you know, wound up going to the Super Bowl, obviously.
I mean, it's one of those three, or barring the, like, the situation that you can't rule out, but is extremely, I would say, unlikely at this point. Tom Brady just going, you know, nuclear and like figuring it out.
Well, that would be the case for like Minnesota gets it together, right? Like
no, I don't think you can say that. I'm saying
arbitrary team X gets hot, like the Bengals of last year.
Yeah, but I think
the NFC
more than any other team, it could be, you know, Tom Brady, but probably not.
But who's next after that? It's probably Minnesota, like in terms of likelihood. And after that, it's Seattle. I mean, so interesting.
I mean, the Commanders maybe if
we'll get to the Commanders. Let's move. A lot's been said about the Cowboys game already as we move on in divisional standings. The Cowboys cemented that first and second place in the division will be Dallas or Philadelphia by sweeping the Giants on Thanksgiving Day. Like I said, we're almost a week removed from the game, especially on the day this episode drops on Wednesday. So everything about the game has been covered. But this was a significant win. I hate that so many Cowboys fans are like, oh, man, we just played 3 games in 12 days. Everybody does that. Every single team does that. The Giants did it. Like literally every single team does it. I also tweeted out and wrote about this. Cowboys now have a huge rest advantage over the Indianapolis Colts. I don't know why this happens. Like this is so unfair to the Colts, and it happens to lots of teams every year, blah, blah, blah. Cowboys coming off a Thursday game, obviously Thanksgiving. The Colts coming off of a Monday night game, and the Colts have to travel. Now, granted, the Monday night game was in Indianapolis. They lost. Jeff Saturday sucks. Everybody saw it. My Colts, I did pick them, but you know, it's really a lack of faith in Steelers than anything. Huge rest advantage. The Cowboys, and this, I don't know 538's exact methodology. I have to imagine that they have the at this point in time, the most friendly road. They have the best schedule, whatever you want to call it. I mean, their next 3 games are against the AFC South, and they're the non-Jaguars teams who look a little bit cute right now. I'm sorry, the non-Titans teams who are the best team. That's what I meant to say. So they've got the Colts at home, the Texans at home, and then the Jaguars on the road. It's hard to see how they are not 11-3 by the time they meet the Eagles on Christmas Eve. But anything can happen. It is the NFL.
Cowboys did not cover the spread, by the way.
That was a bad beat at the very end.
It was, but as you said with the Devontae Smith fumble, that turned into a touchdown in the Commanders game. It still counts. So they didn't cover the spread. I mean, I took the Giants to win. Obviously, I didn't feel good about that as the week was like, or we were getting closer to the game. And like everyone, and the Giants are missing like 7 or 8 defensive or starters total or something.
They were
like,
down bad. It was a rough. Dallas did the like Thanksgiving Day thing where they played down to their opponent in the first half. But to their credit, unlike previous years, they pulled them. And I would say Dak pulled them out of it in the second half. That was one of the most impressive halves of football he's ever had.
Well, and Michael Gallup. I thought Gallup was awesome in that game. Like he looks like
he really kind of found himself in Minnesota, and really in Minnesota looked like the version of himself before he tore his ACL. So he's really kind of coming along now.
the hands catches specifically really stood out, because I thought some of those balls weren't like terrible balls by Dak, but they weren't necessarily great. And he was just making like incredible catch after incredible catch in high leverage situations. I thought Gallup was really good. Yeah, he definitely looked back. So that really stood out to me. Real quick on the Colts point, it's also like, this is subtle, but the Cowboys play earlier too. It's not like they didn't even play like a Thursday night football game. They play, you know, at four.
So and they didn't, and the Colts didn't play Monday at four either. Like they played.
There's even like an hour difference too, and not just the day difference.
When I wrote about that, just quickly, the team who's gotten like screwed the worst this season has been the New Orleans Saints. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, tough. Too bad.
After playing on Monday Night Football, granted a game in New Orleans, they had to travel to face the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were coming off of their bye. That's what I'm saying. Like that's like it's like that teams who are coming
some
off
of
their
that's bye, gonna happen.
But that's like no, but like how hard is it to have teams play each other coming off their byes? You know, like match up, you know, the byes that way. Like
the Eagles got royally screwed one year. I forget, I think this is like 2011, where they had to play like the Patriots on the road and then the Seahawks the next week on the road on Thursday night. So they had to travel across the country in a short week. That's just like
the Eagles also caught a little benefit, just for full context. So they played in Houston, granted a road game, on Thursday Night Football the night the Astros won game five. And then the next week hosted Monday Night Football. So they got a week and a half to host Monday Night Football, where the Commanders had to travel for that. And granted, the Commanders still won that game.
Well, that kind of lessens the normal Thursday advantage, though. Thursday to Sunday advantage.
Not if they had to stay home. If the Eagles had to travel, I would agree with you more. You know what I mean? Because you're giving the Commanders that extra day of rest, and then, you know, they get to stay at home. But whatever. Like, that's
I don't want to
focus on that. But it is a huge advantage for Dallas.
Sure. There's two more things I wanted to get to with the Cowboys. Number one, I mean, it's not why they won the game, but that did the touchdown by the Giants, the first one that was wiped off the board, was such a bad. And also, like, yeah, I know it's not necessarily the difference in the game, but just kind of like the no clear recovery thing in the Eagles Cowboys game once upon a time, that does like shift the vibe of the game after you work so hard to get a touchdown like that, and yet it gets called back by a penalty that has nothing to do with the score. I'm sure you've watched the replay. Like by letter of the law, yes, you can say it was like he was downfield, but like the spirit of that rule is not why that flag is thrown, though.
That's like saying, oh, well, that holding penalty had nothing to do with that the side of the field that the play happened on. Like, the letter of the law, the rule was broken.
But you could, like, do that every single play, though. Like, that's just not – but it's not designed to be on a play.
You're focusing on a tiny –
let me get through this. The right tackle is pass blocking the Cowboys defensive lineman, and he only moves downfield in, like, a natural progression of his blocking, not to create an illegal advantage. And also, that flag was very late, by the way. So that was kind of a big bummer could play for the Giants there.
My point is, you could play this game with anything. Like, you can you could argue some of Tyler Smith's penalties are not like holding; they're just him dominating. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can make this ambiguous
like
however
the
you
Giants
want to.
Defensive lineman at one point.
So the setup to that play, though, that sequence was Mike McCarthy going for it on fourth down early on. I loved that. Like, there are a lot of Cowboys fans who hated that. I loved that. I mean,
it's not a wrong decision.
I love. Like, you know, walking around like you're the better team, like saying like
Zeke,
you know,
too, like Zeke's good at getting, you know, short.
Right.
It's
but like,
to stop.
I love the perspective of like, you know, we're so confident
you're
that we
scared.
Own this team. Yeah. Like we're fine surrendering a touchdown here, which almost happened to your point. And we know we'll overcome that. And they, you know, did technically. But
the second thing I wanted to get to, if you're done.
Well, I was just going to add to that point, like there's too much revisionist history that goes like on, like, because the Giants wind up getting a field goal out of that. People are like, well, they gave up 3 points. Yeah, so what? But what if they'd gotten the first down? Like, it's like live and die with that aggressive nature. I would take that 100 out of 100 times over the conservative, like weak, like, oh, no. Like, if you believe in your offense, go get it.
Like Doug Peterson did at the end of the Jags-Ravens
and
game.
And Brandon Staley.
I didn't see that one. I saw the Doug one live.
It was the exact same thing.
Okay, cool. I didn't see it. I didn't see it happen. Your boy, Brandon Staley. The other thing is, and I have a Giants thing to get to once we get to the Giants section, still from this game, of course, naturally. But the other thing is, Cowboys, can you just sign Odell Beckham Jr. already? Like, I know that if this was not a Cowboys situation,
and
this big, you know, drawn out thing is very good for you as a content creator, page views and TikTok views and everything. Sir. I get that from that standpoint. I acknowledge that. But from like, I feel like if this were any other team and it did not impact your team, you'd just be like, just sign him already. Like, it's so dumb. This is so obnoxiously drawn out. Just sign. Just do it. Why is this being drawn out?
Do you want to hear my theory?
Happening for a month. Just do it.
Do you want to hear my theory? I don't know if I've expressed it to you, but some people at B2B have heard it. I mean, it's not like a like a legitimate theory. It's just kind of like a fun ha ha hee hee, you know, sort of thing. So I found it. I found it oddly coincidental. So, like, if we trace this back to just the genesis of where the theory was born.
What's your favorite Genesis song?
What is that one? Invisible Touch. Okay. That's my favorite. Yeah. Wow. Look at that music pull. Well done. Anyway, so the Sunday that the Cowboys played the Vikings, which was the Sunday before Thanksgiving Day, that morning, and you know this very well, you know, you get your standard Sunday morning news dumps, blah, blah, blah. The national insiders open up the notebooks, whatever. It comes out that Sunday morning that the Cowboys and Giants are Odell Beckham Jr.'s final two teams. Why? Why that Sunday morning? The same Sunday that the Cowboys were the number one game for CBS.
Hey, Brian Windhorst.
Well, I tweeted this out sort of in a little bit of a thread, and somebody responded with that meme. But so that Sunday, the Sunday in question, the Cowboys were CBS's number one game with Jim Nance, Tony Romo, Tracy Wilson. So huge stage. And granted, CBS cut away from them, you know, because the score was so bad. But mm-hmm. they talked about it, right? CBS in their big national window talked about this, whatever. So Cowboys Giants, and this is the numbers supported this, but before the Thanksgiving Day game, I said this is the biggest game of the season outside of the Super Bowl from a ratings perspective. Like, just talking about that in terms of viewership, the Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving Day game does the most monster number of any game that is not the Super Bowl. So the Sunday before the game that featured the Cowboys and Giants, it comes out that the Cowboys and Giants are Odell Beckham Jr.'s final two teams. Why? Like, why would the Giants have at that point in time been ahead of the Bills, been ahead of the 49ers, been ahead of the Chiefs? It made no sense whatsoever. And then, you know, I get it. He played for the Giants, obviously, whatever. So, of course, what happens on Thanksgiving Day, the lead up, all Odell Beckham Jr. on the pregame shows. During the game, they do a special segment. They flash an Odell tweet, blah, blah, blah. It's a huge story, blah, 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 blah. What comes out after, or in the lead up of all that and throughout it all, he's going to visit the team on December 5th. Do you know what day December 5th is?
No,
it's next Monday. Okay. So the Odell story got big pop for the Cowboys on the number one CBS broadcast. The Odell story got big pop for the Cowboys on the number one Fox broadcast on Thanksgiving Day, which literally had the more viewers than any regular season game ever. I don't know if you saw that, 42 million people watched. And now his visit with the Cowboys, to your point, why is it taking so long, is slated to occur one day after the Dallas Cowboys are on Sunday Night Football this week, NBC's number one broadcast. So,
but
why?
It's like, dumb. I get what you're saying, but my
point,
it's enough.
I think my general theory is the Cowboys, Odell, all people involved are very comfortable with getting as much attention as possible out of this. They're having fun with it. And if they are, that's cool. They're winning while they're doing it. So, you know, it's not like it's hurting the team or anything like that. But yeah, like, this is a very strange and unique thing. But CBS, Fox, and NBC will all have benefited from it in their prime opportune windows.
I also think, like, at this point, it's just the hype is really, you know, like, you're setting expectations very high. And
I don't know about that. I think
you are, because there's so much, like, hype around it.
We've done this
massive deal for a player coming off a significant injury. And
I can't
only
speak for the irrational
11.3 yards per reception last year. With
we
the
have
Rams.
Done our
it wasn't
job
even that great.
We have done our job at BTB as far as tempering expectations. And that's all we can do is be measured and cautious.
Yeah, I'm not just calling out you. I'm saying the collective.
Well, I mean, if you're mad about the collective, we're going to be mad about everything forever. But this does feel inevitable. And so, yeah, like, and again, why go visit the Giants now? Like, why? Like,
I just want it to be done with. Like, I don't care. It's just being too drawn out.
Well, you know what? I agreed with you before, but now that I know it annoys you, I hope it continues on forever.
It's just like, what's the point? Like, it's okay. It's like, there's a new report that he's going to sign the Cowboys. Yeah, I've seen like 10 of those reports already. What is the point of another new report that says
the
he's
point
sign
is
the Cowboys?
To add attention to the mix. And you can disagree with the spirit behind that, but that is the point at this point in time.
Once the plane story came out, and that's when I actually knew he was going to sign to the Cowboys, because that was very fair.
Oh my gosh. Let's move on to the Giants. Natural segue, the team who lost on Thanksgiving Day.
We need a break.
Okay, you know what? Let's take a break. Let's hear a word from our sponsors.
We need to take a long break.
Let's take a very quick break and hear a word from our sponsors.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. elevate how you hydrate, and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Welcome back. Wow. During the break.
I'm so refreshed.
During the break, Brandon said he went and got a Capri Sun. What flavor is it, Brandon?
I don't even know what kind of flavors there are for Capri Sun.
It's like strawberry kiwi. I feel confident saying okay. That's a flavor.
Yeah, that sounds right. Hard to go wrong. Are they really that different? Is there any like big difference in a Capri Sun flavor?
I feel like that is literally the purpose of the flavoring is to establish a difference in flavor.
Huge? Is it a huge difference? What do you know?
Blind, what is your favorite? What is your favorite thing to drink that is like a box or pouch that you poke a straw into?
Sips.
What is that?
It's like a iced tea juice box that I used to have when I was like in kindergarten, I think.
You were drinking iced tea in kindergarten? Look at you.
Yeah.
Explains how you're 6'5".
It was like a juice box, 6'9". Sips. I think it has, what's that, a couple S's at the front? Really good. What about you?
I will go high C. The yellow box, stick the straw.
Are you talking about juice? Or are you talking about anything?
Anything you want, because you could have gone like some kind of milk. You know what I mean?
I was going like, to say, I like a Yoo-Hoo.
Yeah, I've never been a Yoo-Hoo person.
Like, but I need the bottle, honestly. I don't want the box.
You know what is good? Doesn't come in a box, but the strawberry Nesquik comes in like a plastic bottle. Not because the Yoo-Hoo is like a glass bottle, right?
Yeah, I do like a banana Nesquik.
That sounds really good. All right. This show, not sponsored by Nesquik. The New York Giants, similar to our Blink-182, you know, gatekeeping sort of thing. Now everybody is like, man, I don't know. The Giants could miss the playoffs. Yeah, why don't you listen to the NFC's mixtape?
That's right.
That's what we were talking about last week. Look, they're down bad, like from an injury standpoint. That is totally fair context. Mm-hmm. That being
said, you
can't
crush them for it.
No, like I don't think that they're losers or anything like that. Like they're just, you know, not only are they now hurt, but they're reaching the like tough part of their schedule. And not only the tough part, they have such consequential games brewing, especially now that they have these, well, not for them, but the Commanders playing them back to back for them. This is a tough thing. And if they get through it, I mean, kudos. Like, and I think they deserve kudos already. Like I don't want to take away from what the Giants have accomplished. But it is not looking good for them right now with the road that is unfolding in front of them.
Yeah, I think the season's kind of already a success for the most part.
Right.
Because you feel good about the long term. Although it could really end on a sour note if they choke down the stretch here and miss the playoffs. It doesn't mean everything is a failure, but it does kind of like raise a little bit more doubt than you would have thought that if they did, there's like zero doubt that, oh yeah, they're headed in the right direction. We're playing with house money. Doesn't even matter if we're one and done in the playoffs. Whereas if they miss it, it's like, was all the beginning kind of a flash in the pan? Or are they going to revert back to the same old Giants? And so a couple things from this game and really beyond this game. Saquon, who we've taken the L on this podcast, last six games, 3.6 yards per carry and 4.7 yards per reception. That's really bad. His longest run in that stretch, 27 yards, came against the Texans, who are the worst team in the NFL and aren't good at defending the run, like many other teams, but still, they are not, as you saw when Derrick Henry just destroyed them. And his longest reception in that stretch is 12 yards. So the early season Saquon has not been recent Saquon, and he was a big reason why they were able to win games, these one-score games earlier on. And since then, has not been the same guy. which is a big concern when you might have to sign, well, when you will have to make a decision on this guy's future and what you want to do with him long term. And I think you can't really sign him. I don't think you can. Like, this is, I don't know
franchise tag. That you got to tag him.
Sure. But I don't know that this is a guy who, when he's at his best, yes, he's one of the very best running backs in the NFL. He's dangerous. But I don't know from a durability standpoint that this is like Derrick Henry, you know, a guy who's like built to last right. and can have these freak. And to be fair, many running backs aren't that because that's really hard to do. But like Derrick Henry, like Zeke to some extent, I don't know if Saquon is one of those guys.
I think that's all fair. Sorry, I'm looking something up here. But
are you looking at my tweets?
No, I wouldn't do that. I have no need for that.
Because I tweeted that.
I mean, I'm sure you did. It's kind of sad. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not sad that the Giants are going to lose and maybe fall out of the playoffs, but like, it is a whimper. You know what I mean? Like, it's a whimpering sort of end. And there's no shame in that. You know, because the first, like, they did some really improbable things.
A little
things. Shame. But so their point differential is -7 right now. they are ranked. What do you think they're ranked in overall team DVOA?
20th.
20th. They are 21st. So you, did not go over, so you're still eligible for the
Price is Right rules.
They are 16th offensively, 28th defensively, and 16th from a special team standpoint. They're an average team that has had some above average moments that they deserve credit for. But I think if they're a playoff team, do you think that they survive the Commanders to be the sixth seed in the NFC, or do you think they're a 7 seed or bust team for the playoffs?
I think they're gonna drop down to 7 if they make it. And here's what I'll say about this final stretch. I think this final stretch should be very telling for Daniel Jones. I think if he is the guy to ride with, it's not like, you know, he's gonna be putting up massive 300 yard numbers just because of all the injuries and the lack of support he has in some ways. But still, like, if you're truly franchise guy, superstar, you get this team to the playoffs. You find a way, you get this team in. And again, maybe you're one and done, but you get them there. You don't allow a total collapse. Daniel Jones, I have been like kind of not ready to be out on him for a while. I feel like been trying to be more fair than maybe he possibly deserves. But that Cowboys game, I'm leaning towards out on him. I might be out on him. I think the only thing that can save him is like a good stretch down here or down the stretch run. Some of those throws, RJ, on those like gotta have it third downs and that one over the turnover on downs, dudes are like wide open in the flat and he's missing them or he's throwing behind Saquon or two. Like, what are you doing? Like, this is gotta have it throws. I know he doesn't have the best supporting system, but he did not make the most of what he had on plays that he should have had. That one, I forget what's his name. I made like that insane twisting catch just to be able to get that. Like, that was a big red flag to me. I'm like, that is not franchise quarterback stuff right there.
You're terming it gotta have it or I'm sorry, in or out on High Daniel leverage. Jones. Right, no, but you're terming it like whether you're in or out. I think the best way to term it, if I have to bring one person back, it's Saquon. Right. Like I think you could, like, there's an inherent value that Daniel Jones offers as the quarterback of your team. But like, if I have to bring one of them back and I'm only gonna commit to one of them for 2023, it's Saquon. Like, Saquon has proven that he is a very talented player once again. That is not, that level of proof is not there for Daniel Jones. I wanna like tie a bow on this with a couple of things. One, so the Eagles and Cowboys to the NFC East are what the Bills and Dolphins are to the AFC East, right? Like, the two clear teams at the top, with teams at the bottom who are kind of contending and may wind up taking the entire the division to the playoffs. You agree with this? Which New York team is better, the Jets or the Giants?
I think the Jets have the higher ceiling.
I agree with that. Which is just, that didn't, it's just a weird, again, it was obvious, but it is also still unsettling that it's happening. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of a weird thing in that sense. I also think that maybe the Giants, the way that Saquon deserves credit, I think the Giants deserve credit for Kadarius Toney. Like, there was a lot of like, oh, he's going to Kansas City. He's going to go off now. Do you know how many receptions Kadarius Toney has as a member of the Chiefs?
I don't.
What would you guess?
I don't know. 10?
He has 6 catches for 69 yards. Nice.
Nice.
He does have the one touchdown, but they were like, and look, they missed on the pick. Like, that's embarrassing, right? But like, that was the old regime. That was Dave Gettleman. Like, I do believe it's hard if you're a Giants fan to allow, like, to force yourself to not, you know, lean into the expectation. But like you said, you should tell yourself, you know what, we have a chance to go be like a one and done playoff team, whatever. And we have the perfect, like, remember we said at the beginning of the season, this Jalen Hurts has to prove one way or another whether you're going to commit to him in 2023 or beyond. He has proven that. Daniel Jones, you have the perfect, you know, vacuum to prove yourself in. So you've like, by accident or purpose, whatever you call it, like designed the perfect sort of focus group for Daniel Jones. I think that's a good thing. I do think that the Giants are the like walking wild card win for somebody. I don't know who that is, but right now it would be the San Francisco 49ers. Like, because they're the sixth seed. But so
it's destroyed.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, they are going to represent like an easy ticket to somebody if they get in. Like, they're the like far the least intimidating team to draw in the wild card round if they do wind up getting there.
Last thing I'll say on Daniel Jones is that I think someone's going to have to pay if they, you know, collapse here and don't make the playoffs. And it's not going to be the coaching staff, obviously. It's not going to be them, Dable, or Martindale, or Kafka. Like, I don't think any of those guys are getting fired. In fact, it's possible that one of them might get hired in theory. I think that's more likely than fired. So I don't think they're going to have to pay. And I think Saquon's going to be back on the tag, like you said. So, like, someone's going to have to pay for the failure. That's whether, even if that should be the case or not, that's how, like, I feel like NFL owners can operate. Certainly, I thought Carson Wentz, you know, being traded was deserved, but also that was like a Jim Irsay, very personal, like, we're done. We're Carson Wentz. I don't care who our next quarterback is, but it cannot be Carson Wentz. I think the Maras / the Tisses might be in that spot with Daniel Jones if they collapse down the stretch, where even if they don't want to, it's not like as personal as it was with Irsay and Carson Wentz, where like there's going to be pressure on someone. There's going to be a fall guy, and I think it might be Daniel Jones.
Fall guy is an intense way to put it, but you're right. Like, somebody's going to have to answer, so to speak, for, you know, this particular thing. Interesting question. Just kind of looking around, and I wanted to make sure, no guaranteed money for Jared Goff in 2023. Who's to say the Lions don't move on, right? Like, because you're kind of at that point if you're the Lions. It's a different thing. It's not the NFC North mixtape, but like, he's finally cuttable after the huge contract that the Rams gave him that the Lions absorbed in the trade. Mm-hmm. Jared Goff is the quarterback of the New York Giants. No, like that. They're a better team, are they not? Like, with him, I mean, because like,
yes,
but like, who's the answer? Who's the would be free agent answer for them? You know what I'm saying? Like, and they're equipped enough to be competitive. Well, I mean, it's a whole different thing. Jimmy G in New York would be exhausting. Like the level of coverage and
the
stuff.
Jimmy G man.
Oh, nice. Very, very well done. By the way, this will be a topic in the offseason. I think, you know how we saw Dalton Schultz, David Njoku, and was it Mike Gesicki that all got the tag at tight end last year? We're in for like a tag-a-sance among running backs. Saquon's probably going to get the tag. I have to believe that Tony Pollard's going to get the tag. It's just impossible that the Cowboys would let him walk. Josh Jacobs probably going to get the tag. Is Miles Sanders in a contract year?
He is. I don't think they'll tag him, though.
Maybe not him, but like, there's going to be a lot of tags happening at the running back position. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the Washington Commanders, who were fortunate that the Atlanta Falcons are the Atlanta Falcons. I know you were getting busy for the night game. Did you see the way this sequence ended? Like, this game ended for the
on
Falcons?
On replay, I did not watch it live, yes.
Dude, it was unbelievable. And I wasn't like, I was obviously rooting against the Commanders, but I wasn't like passionately rooting against them. But still, it was kind of frustrating. Like, you know, when you're rooting against a team in that situation, like whatever you might need, and you're like, how did you blow it? Like, it was kind of like wild that the Falcons
the Falcons.
That's true. But they blew it twice on offense and defense, or special teams, if you want to call it that. But Commanders got the win. They are 7-5. They deserve all of their flowers. Ron Rivera's job, I think, is well secure. We can touch on the Sean Taylor honoring, if you want to call it that. Where do you want to go here? Because I don't know that there's a lot to take from the game. Like, it was kind of like a ho-hum game.
I will say, you know, a lot of one-score games here. So the Commanders deserve credit, certainly, for, you know, pulling through and executing.
They covered the spread, too, if you're putting some, you know, props
in playing
that.
Better football than they were, you know, earlier this year, for sure. I'm not trying to say they're bad again, but like, there have been a lot of one score games here. So they have been getting, I think, more fortunate lately. Certainly Taylor Heineke is not like, you know, this amazing player, but he is a guy you can win with, as you guys were talking about on Monday Football Monday. He doesn't beat the Commanders. He doesn't, you know, shoot themselves in the foot. So, you know, they're in a nice spot because they're surging here. They get this big opportunity going up against the Giants. It once looked like their season was dead in the water after that bad start. And now it looks like they're a pretty decent bet, not a lock, but a decent bet to get a wild card spot here. I think you have to give credit to how they found their identity. That is such like, by the way, I feel like that's the most overused phrase in football analysis. Like, you see that on the broadcast before the game. They just need to get their identity. And I think a lot of that...
They stick to who they are.
It doesn't mean anything. A lot of times when people say that, but I think in this case, I can point to you their identity, And it's that really good defense, and it's a ball control offense. It's how they beat the Eagles. They played ball control. That's their style of play right now. It's definitely not a style of play that probably is going to lead them to a championship and going to work long term, but it's working for them right now.
Defense that's still getting Chase Young back, which is going to, I mean, like, that is one of the more, like,
I don't know, though. I think I'm kind of soured on that.
No, it seems like
he's not healthy.
I agree with you in like, whatever, but, like, they have played that conservatively, and it's worked out for them, right? Like, they've gotten to this point where they are technically a playoff team right now, and I don't know. Like, it's he represents one of the biggest butterfly effect moments of the NFC East right now. Like who he is, because of the fact that they play the Giants twice and the Cowboys once. Like, he represents a huge butterfly effect opportunity to change the fortunes of things. Also, I mean, they play the Niners. Like, you know what I mean? They could impact the NFC West and therefore impact the team who one of the NFC East teams plays, you know, whatever. I think
one of them. Yes, sorry. The Cowboys are locked in, I think, if they get that 5 seed to the Bucks in the South. But yeah.
No, but like, at some point, you know what I'm saying? Like, and dictating where that game would be, you know what I mean? As opposed to San Francisco, Seattle, depending on
the other NFC East teams.
Yeah. I think people will look back at this Washington season and look at the Eagles win as the you said, like, another overused thing is like the moment everything changed. Like, people will look for the Eagles game as that moment. The moment was the Chicago win that we talked about, the Thursday night game. No, but like, I mean, like,
it's
that
such
is
a bad win. It did not play well.
It was bad and ugly and weird. And it's like, doesn't it,
and they
it's
almost not, didn't it, win. It came down to that.
That's
goal line.
What I'm saying. Like, it doesn't have the like sex appeal that the Eagles win does to be like, we were the first team to knock off the undefeated Eagles, whatever. But like, that's when the run started. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they deserve credit for that. They have taken advantage of what you have to take advantage of. And this feels similar to the 2012 Washington season. Remember when they were 2-7 and they just like ripped off 7 in a row and they won the division. Again, the division kind of collapsed around them, which allowed that, namely the Cowboys. But I mean, I'm so interested to watch these next two games for the Commanders. And that bye week being sandwiched in, never do that again, NFL. That is so stupid to have the Commanders play the Giants twice in a row.
I think maybe an apology could be due for me writing off the Commanders earlier this season was doubting who I thought highly of in the past, Ron Rivera, in that, like, the thing we said about him, the appeal there, is that he's an adult in the room. He's going to keep things relatively stable. And that's exactly what happened here. Like, he didn't let the season totally spiral out of control. Like, bad head coaches would, and adversity hits and things go to total disaster. He kept things stable. He kept it normal. That's a big
appeal
with Doug Peterson.
Totally fair. He had the one misstep with the Wentz line where he publicly doubted him. And like, I'm not defending Wentz here, but that's not something a head coach should do. He created that particular firestorm. But to your point, the Sean Taylor thing that happened, which was horrible this past week, the latest Sean Taylor thing that happened that has been horrible. I do think that would have a bigger impact on different locker rooms than it does under Ron Rivera. And I think that Ron learned from the way he handled the Wentz thing. And it's similar to do you remember what Robert Saleh's quote was about Zach Wilson? Like how he said, like Robert said that Zach's line about being benched was like, why me or whatever. Like, we were talking about that on Friday. And like, look, you can think Zach Wilson sucks all you want, but that's a really awful thing for Robert Saleh to say. That's really kind of selling his dude out. And I think he probably learned from that. He probably didn't realize how that was going to play in front of the media and how that quote was going to get taken. And I think the same sort of thing happened to Ron. Even though he's a much more seasoned and veteran head coach, he had a misstep with the Carson Wentz thing. And I would argue the misstep was trading for him to begin with. The Genesis, there's that word again, for our first ever emergency episode. So in many ways, this season was foretold the moment that the commander traded for Carson Wentz, man.
There's a floor. That's what I've always said with Ron Rivera. There's a floor.
I'm just saying he deserves credit, but he deserved his criticism for that moment. But he has rallied the troops back.
But I'm saying the appeal with him to me is he brings a floor. And a lot of other head coaches, I think the floor drops out for them and you could hit rock bottom. And I don't think you're necessarily going to hit rock bottom with him the way other coaches, lesser coaches would.
Would you rather have Ron Rivera or Todd Bowles right now?
I mean, I will take Todd Bowles' body of work, although it's tough because I think it's very tough. I think he's an elite. He might be the best defensive coordinator in the NFL, but I don't know if he's a great head coach.
Would you rather have Ron Rivera or Dan Campbell?
Probably Rivera. Just, again, body of work. I think you have to
take
that.
That's what I'm saying, like Ron Rivera or Kevin Stefanski?
I mean, I would probably swing on the upside of Stefanski.
Plus, offensive-minded head coach, right? Like, I mean, but still, like, you know, This did not feel like it was going to be
better
way.
Now, you have to give Rivera more credit. Yeah.
Ron Rivera or Arthur Smith in Atlanta. I mean, they beat them.
Arthur Smith, I've never been an Arthur Smith guy.
I don't want anything associated cute, with the Falcons. I agree.
In any way. I mean, Dan Quinn is working out for you guys, but still, like, I'm not betting on anything Falcons. Don't get anything Falcons near me. Don't want it.
Last one. Ron Rivera or Cliff Kingsbury?
I mean, I've never been a Cliff guy.
Right.
Never been a Sean McVay guy, and I've been vindicated. I wish they did not win the Super Bowl.
No. We have never been Sean McVay. We have been the only people who think, you know, like, you get mad about the Belichick comparison all the time, but, like, it was so stupid of people. That, like, people act like he's infallible. And you know what, Bob? Like, I hope he's okay from the
–
you saw the jaw thing. I hope he's okay. But he's the exact person who the national media will, like, instead of criticizing them for losing, they'll have fun with the jaw thing.
Look how funny he is.
Right, exactly. Like, he'll get come on manned and everything. It's like, but nobody will talk about how the Rams stink. So whatever. My last thing on the Commanders, not football related. The black uniforms really are awesome. I think that they're a really good look. If they get rid of the lines bordering the names on the back,
the lines.
Yeah, like, if you get rid of those, I'm told, like, they're their best uniform by far. Like, wear them all the time. They look good. I really like those black uniforms.
I mean, they're regular. By the way, just aren't good. Is part of the issue there.
Both gangrene, whatever people that debuted black helmets this season won their debuts. Other teams did not. The Arizona Cardinals lost in their black helmet debut.
You have to explain to the listeners what you mean by that.
So several teams debuted black helmets this season, alternate helmets. And some teams wear them with black uniforms, some don't. I think all of them do. But the Cardinals lost their debut with their black helmets. They have, I think they won since, but they lost the debut. The Commanders lost their debut to the Cowboys. I think the Panthers won their debut too. Now that I think about it, that Thursday night game against the Falcons, the Saints lost. They're the ones who didn't wear the black uniform. They wore them in London and they wore them with the white jersey.
That's so dumb.
They lost on that last second field goal against the Vikings. Man, that Vikings, like, the fact that they barely eke that out is so sad in hindsight. So the Saints lost their debut. I think they were the first team to lose the debut. The Jets were the first team to win a debut in them. Then the Panthers and the Eagles just did it on Sunday night with the full black getup. But like we said, if you're going to do it at night, like, unveil it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's the right way to do it. Get rid of the Lions, Commanders, and I'm all the way in. By the way, just quickly on the Saints, again, the fact that Peter King had them as his number one seed in the NFC, it just is wild to think about. So
You mentioned why the Green Nation thing, because Gang Green Nation for the Jets, the SB Nation site, and the Bleeding Green Nation. I did want to get your thoughts on the Eagles black helmet while we're talking about that.
It is so the best looking black helmet of the new ones might be the Commanders now, because I really like the W on the front. You know what I mean? Like, I like the placement. It's not too big. Like, I really
front
do
center,
like it.
For those who are not watching the YouTube.
Right, like, it's over the forehead. The one I like the least is the Saints. I don't like it that much.
I agree.
I don't know why it doesn't work. I really don't like the Cardinals one. Because for some reason, the bird is, like, metallic. Yeah, I don't need, keep the same red.
I meant, like, the metallic red. Like, the stealth, like,
that's,
red.
That's what I'm saying. Like, keep the same red. Like, a cherry red would look awesome. Like, kind of like the Falcons. You know what black addition will be great to the Cardinals? Is just put a black stripe on your white helmet. That would look cool. You know what I mean? Like, just literally put a black stripe on the white helmet. But I don't like the Jets logo. Like, I hate oval logos. I don't like the Niners logo or the Packers. It's not a logo. It's a letter. It's a stamp.
It's their name. It's just the name of the team.
Right. They go metallic as well, but on the face mask, which is kind of distracting. You know what I mean? For the Jets, they go with a metallic green face mask. I've never thought the Panthers have good uniforms. I know a lot of people
I love their black. I mean, so the Thursday night football, they're black and blue. That was great.
Not a fan. I guess by process of elimination, the Eagles, because it looks the most similar to their normal helmet. You know what I'm saying? Like, and the Eagles have a very strong looking helmet. Like, and it is, I love the way, the spirit of the Vikings, the Eagles, and the Rams helmets, like how their helmets are like extensions of what those animals or mascots would be. So they win by process of elimination.
Yeah. So my thought on them is that I was not very excited leading up to the game, because all of the pictures I kept seeing them in, it looked like dark gray to me. Because it's not matte. That's one thing I don't like. I think it should be matte black. I don't like how it's not matte black.
I like the shiny black.
Okay, so It looks bad in like bright light though. So I think they almost can't wear those during a day game, which usually they don't, but they have in the past. So I don't think they can, because it's going to look like, at least to me, I think it's going to look like more dark gray than it does even black. So I don't like that to begin with. They looked better in the dark, certainly at the night game. I just think they're so subtle. I don't even think you can notice a difference. Like unless you're like really paying attention to it, I don't really think there's a big difference from the dark green to that black.
That's what, like, none of them really like wow me. You know what I mean? Like that's what the Commanders one kind of does. And the Commanders has the W, because it has the yellow, it pops. You know what I mean? So that's why I do kind of like them the most. But you're right, because the forest green is so dark already, like, or whatever. There is not much of a difference. And it looks like even like less of a difference, because the Eagles have worn those black uniforms before with the midnight green helmet. So it really is like the tiniest little adjustment.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying don't do it, but it's funny how the excitement is there. Oh, the black helmets. And it's like, this is like barely any different. It's so subtle.
Last question on these lines.
To see the Kelly Green helmet.
Right. Who has, and the Seahawks are going to bring their throwbacks back. I'm loving this. It's all good. Who has the best black helmet in your opinion of all eligible ones in the NFL?
I mean, you just ran them through them all, but I don't have them in front of me.
There's one correct answer.
You mean like, so not just the ones you talked about, but
right. Yeah. Like, like even standard helmets.
What's
as well?
The Steelers stuff?
No, the Ravens. That's the best black helmet in the NFL. The black and purple look sick.
No, I like those colors, but I think the Steelers, I like the matte of the Steelers.
I hate how the Steelers refer to themselves as like black and gold. Sometimes you're not gold. You're yellow. It's not, you know, it's not gold. It's yellow. So that's my point. Let's pick these games for week 13. We will pick all of the games, as mentioned, with Rob Stats Guerra on the look ahead on the SB Nation NFL show. You can listen to that on Friday or watch it live. It's up to you. But subscribe to the SB Nation NFL show. Leave a rating, write a review. We will go in chronological order, as we always do. So the Cowboys have the night game. The Commanders and Giants squaring off at noon. That one's a little bit juicier. So let's do Eagles Titans, which is also at noon in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's a pretty like big 1 o'clock game. You know, two teams that are like very good records. Where Titans now 8-3, and then
The Chiefs and Bengals are also playing at noon, which is bothersome.
And there's some as of we're recording this, I've not checked Twitter, but I see I have 180 missed tweets, which is making me very anxious. And there's been speculation. I don't know if you've been keeping up with it, that the Eagles might get flexed to
the afternoon.
The night game for week 14?
That's what Pete and I talked about on Monday Football Monday, because that's the Chiefs Broncos game. So
although I would, if it were up to me, I would do the Dolphins Chargers. I think that's the right call, because Dolphins just haven't been in prime time.
Just to be clear, to explain your point, next week, week 14, the Broncos and Chiefs are currently scheduled to play the Sunday night game, but the Broncos stink. So Giants Eagles is one option to place there, or Chargers Dolphins. This is the week that would happen if the NFL is going to flex it. If they don't do it this week, they won't do it the week up, obviously. So we'll see. I agree with you. I would like to see the Chargers and Dolphins, but I mean, the NFC East is, you know, the sort of thing right now. My one thing, by the way, our friends at DraftKings have the Eagles as 5-point favorites over the Titans.
Yeah, that dropped that opened at 6.5.
So normally, and this is true like any year, normally it's like, well, if we're going to lose, let's lose an AFC game, right? Like they matter the least. But like, that's like the way the NFC East is and the Vikings being there, like you don't have that same, I don't want to call it luxury, but like this isn't the same like sort of throwaway like dismissiveness that you would normally have for an AFC loss if it did happen. You know, like last year the Cowboys lost to the Chiefs and Raiders, and it was kind of like, well, you know, if you're gonna lose a game, those are the ones that lose. This is a must win. All games are must wins, obviously, at this point. I mean, Eagles got to get this done, and Derrick Henry's coming.
So the AFC thing is interesting in theory, because it's the least like hurtful loss, although not necessarily when it comes to the common games tiebreaker, which could always be a factor. I don't think that will be the case here.
That's what makes this season unique, is that the Eagles also already have the tiebreaker over the Vikings and currently lead the Cowboys. So like their competition this season isn't a team that they haven't played. You know what I'm saying? Like those excessive tiebreakers aren't necessarily as applicable here.
Right. Yeah. But I'm just saying in theory, like, you know, you would think the AFC is not super meaningful, and usually it's not, but it could be in theory. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So from a Titans perspective, because I know you're very big on them, and I think there's every reason to think you should take the points in this matchup, because first of all, Titans defense has been really good. So I think points are going to be at a premium in this game. I already like the point, taking the points for that reason alone. Also, I would not sleep on a Jim Schwartz revenge game factor. Former Eagles defensive coordinator is now
AJ Brown revenge game.
That's the much bigger talking point.
Nobody hates their former team like AJ Brown. Nobody.
Well, he definitely, yeah. I mean, he's been tweeting about them throughout the season. I will say, for as much as you want to hype up the Titans, and I'm not trying to disrespect them, I'm just saying, I want to ask you a question. What is the Titans' best win this year? Like, look at their schedule and tell me, like, what is like the win that you feel like really great about, that is like their signature win. Maybe it's over the Packers on Thursday Night Football. I mean, after that, you're looking at like the Commanders game, but that was when Wentz was still playing,
A point I've made is that they have, I do believe this, they have the best losses, which is a stupid thing, but they do have the best, because they've lost to the Giants, the Bills, the
weak,
Chiefs,
but yes,
right, the Giants, the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Bengals. Just
I mean, they got destroyed by the Bills, but yeah.
I'm just saying, like, they have the least.
But that Bills loss is bad. It's terrible. 41-7. Like,
you're right. Like, I do think their most impressive performance was the loss of the Chiefs, especially doing it without Ryan Tannehill. And what Malik Davis threw, or Malik Willis, sorry, Malik Davis, the Cowboys.
Completed five passes.
Yeah, completed five passes. So they have, do you know how many times, I don't know if you look this up, do you know how many times the Titans have scored more than 20 points since their bye week?
I'm looking at their schedule. So
their bye week was in week six.
They since did then, it one time.
One time, and it was that Packers win that you talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's like, and I hate like leaning on this, but like that's their thing, right? Is that they're like a wrestle match. They're gonna take you 10 rounds. Is the Titans' game plan?
But they're also, so more than one thing can be true, as I have said on the podcast. I really want a T-shirt that says that. I think that should be an NFC East mixtape T-shirt. Anyway,
Sell them in all four team like colors. Like, we'll get like a navy Cowboys one, a Kelly green one, a burgundy one, and a like
no
bright
one will
blue
buy
one
it
for the
except me. I'm not saying the Titans are bad. I'm just saying I know, because I was, and part of what is prompting me to bring this up is I was looking at Music City Miracles, SB Nation's Tennessee Titans blog, and the conversation down there seems to be like, can the Titans beat a good team? Because they have not really done that so much to this point. So that's definitely something that's being talked about. That's not to say they're tough, or they're not a tough team, because they are. And since 2018, when Mike Vrabel was hired, Titans have the best record straight up as underdogs. They're 22-16.
He's the new Mike Tomlin, as you have said.
I mean, yeah, like the Titans are underdogs in this game, so that absolutely makes me nervous. This is a game that the Eagles can lose. I think it's going to be a dogfight. I think it's going to be a grind. It could be a game that's decided by a field goal. So I like the points in this one, but I will take the Eagles. I think there is something to the AJ Brown revenge factor. I think he's going to bounce back after kind of being sick. The offense, you just saw what they're able to do. I know it was in a way that might not be necessarily sustainable every week, but it encouraged me that the offense can still score a lot. The Eagles can win the trenches. So I think it's going to be a dogfight. I'll take the Eagles to win, but they won't cover.
I think that's how I lay into it. I'm not going to lock this up. I did lock the Packers up. Like I said, I pushed. But I am certainly taking, if I'm picking against the spread, I'm taking the Titans easily.
Yeah.
Because this is, you know, how many one possession games have they had? They beat the Packers by two possessions.
They're 8-3 against the spread this year, by the way.
Other than that, they lost to the Bills by two possessions. I mean, or by more than one possession. They are tough. We've used a lot of like tropes and cliches here, but like they are the true like grind it out. Like that is Mike Vrabel's thing. If the Eagles are going to fall, the Giants games, because they have two, obviously, those look a little bit less intimidating right now. And that's why I'm very anxious to see the Giants. The Bears game, a little part of me was excited that Justin Fields got to rest. Like, get right, Justin. You know,
we'll see if he even plays. We don't even know if he's going
to. That's what I'm saying. Like, of the Eagles' remaining schedule. And like I said,
they're also pretty banged up now.
Heading into their their upcoming two games a week ago, this felt like the one that the Eagles could drop, right? Because this is a team that can. Mm-hmm. Out physical you, because they can out physical anybody. It's not an Eagles thing, but this is the one that is like lurking, I think, for the Eagles. And and plus you got to have this, because you're kicking off a 3-game road trip. You know what I mean? Yeah. After this, like you got to have put this one in the bank, and then hope the right things go your way. I will take the Eagles to win, but I will take the points certainly. Yep. Okay, let's get to the big NFC East matchup. NFC Beast, because all of the teams are good. That's why we call it Beast, because it's a beastly sort of thing. This is also playoffs start now. You know, right? We got to win out. So the way we're looking at it, the playoffs start now. The Washington Commanders on the road are 2.5-point favorites against the New York Jimmy G-men.
I think you have to take the Commanders. Like, what I do you really? So. The Giants are just so banged up. Not that they can't win, but it's a tough path for them right now. And the Commanders are playing this effective strategy. They have their identity. I think the Giants are struggling with that just because of how injured they are and Daniel Jones' inconsistency. And I think the Giants' identity is Saquon being good, and he has not been good. So I think all signs are pointing to the Commanders right now.
I think if the Giants win, it's like a Josh Jacobs sort of performance, right? Like, it's this crazy, like, Saquon goes off, right? Like, Saquon has, like, 40 carries for like 203 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. And I think he has like kind of like Jacobs had the big, what was it, 83 or 86 yard walk off. Like, Saquon has like an 84 yard screen pass that he takes to the house. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things. And like, we are kind of, you think that everybody's due except for the Eagles. The Commanders are kind of due, right? Like they're, I wouldn't say they're like skating on thin ice, but like, they should have lost to the Falcons. You know what I mean? Like, they, like, if we're being fair, like, I would say, yeah, you know, 20 teams win that game that aren't the Falcons. So the Commanders are kind of skating thin. You could kind of see this as being the Giants, like, bounce back, you know, like, put their feet in the ground. And then it's like, okay, now Commanders, you get them in DC, Landover, whatever, one time to kind of square this thing up. Mm-hmm. I'll take the Giants. And wow. And I'm getting points, so I'll take the Giants.
Sure.
Okay. Well done. The Dallas Cowboys opened as 9-point favorites over the Indianapolis Colts that game on Sunday Night Football. That is now up to 11. I think that's the largest line of the week as I look. I don't see anybody anywhere near that, actually. This is, if we're being frank and being honest, and if you listen to this show and SB Nation NFL show, this is the reckoning coming from me. Right? this is my personal reckoning. Brandon's is coming soon with Justin Fields. It's a big spread. Maybe you don't think the Cowboys cover. Maybe there is like a garbage time thing. I don't see how the Cowboys lose this game, honestly. Mm-hmm. Even not counting in the rest advantage, they're just a much better team. The Colts are in, like, Micah Parsons might sack Matt Ryan like four times. Like,
I was just going to say, you stole my thunder. I was going to say congratulations to NFC Defensive Player of the Week, Micah Parsons. because, yeah, I think the Colts are going to get killed here. I mean, Colts have a good defense, or at least they've been having defensive success recently for the most part. So maybe they cover just from a standpoint of it's not a super high-scoring output for the Cowboys offense, and it's kind of a muck-it-up game a little bit. But I just don't think even if that's the case, I think the game will not reflect the score being as close as it would be. So I think the Cowboys, I'm going to take them to win and cover.
You're laying 11 points.
Yeah, I mean, Colts, they struggle to score. Dude, offensive line is going to be a big issue.
They're so bad in the red
Saturday.
Zone. Like, dude, I mean, it really is. I don't know what to think of that Colts-Eagles game, like, in hindsight. You know what I mean? Like, I really don't, like, was that, like, weird Saturday interim magic? Was that the Eagles, you know, starting to fall apart? Like, was it just a weird day? Like, it's such a weird
game. The first
game
without Goddard, they played a lot of 13 personnel in the first half. It clearly wasn't working at all. They've gone away from it completely since. They didn't play it at all in the second half, and they scored two touchdowns. The offense kind of started to get back on track, and then they didn't do it at all, really, against the Packers. So I think they totally outsmarted themselves, and I told you that was like uncharacteristically like galaxy brain stuff from the offense, from both Shane Steichen and Nick Sirianni. Like, that was like their worst performances of the season by far.
Let me speaking of Nick Sirianni, let me make a little fun bet here, like, not a real bet of consequence. If the Cowboys cover the line here, that while we're recording, so if the line might move, but the 11 points, that's what I'm laying right here. I'm taking the Colts to cover, but Dallas to win. But if the Cowboys cover, I will do a Nick Sirianni, that was for Frank Reich impression on next week's NFC East mixtape. So
I'm sure people really want that.
I really want that. So, you know, emotional hedge, baby. You taught me that. All right. So we have the Eagles at 11-1, the Cowboys at 9-3, and then we're split on the Giants. So one of them is getting to 8 wins. At the end of next week, 3 teams in the NFC East are going to have at least 8 wins, which is pretty wild when you think about it.
Unless there's a tie.
That would suck. I would hate to have to like factor that into stuff.
I agree.
I would not want to go through that. Okay. Does Donovan McNabb know that a tie is possible?
I don't know. Wait to ask him.
Future NFC's mixtape guest. Brandon, as we leave, I would like you to say your favorite thing about pasta.
I'm not a big pasta guy. I do eat it from time to time, but it's not like, so it's one of these situations where I don't know if anyone else can relate. It's something you had a lot growing up, so you kind of burnt yourselves out of it. Mm. So my parents used to have that a lot for dinner. In fairness to my parents who are listening, I love you, Mom and Dad. It was a time, so they had me when they were very young. They had me when they were only 23. So, you know, they had not yet achieved a lot of financial stability at that time in life. So pasta was kind of like what they could afford. I totally get that. I'm not like blaming them. I'm just saying, like, the reality of the situation kind of burnt me out on wanting pasta a lot.
Wow.
So it's not my favorite thing, although my favorite pasta would be gnocchi, which is kind of cheating because it's not even fully pasta. And there's a lot of potato in there, and I love potato, but I love a gnocchi. I love a, you know, a vodka rigatoni. Like, love that sauce. I wish you've never had, right?
No, I never had that.
That's just so insane.
I mean, you know, someday. Actually, as we end, that was a really good answer on the pasta. We bumped this recording up. We normally record around 1 Central here on the mixtape, but we recorded at 11 a.m. Central to give us time for what we found out was a meeting, but also for the United States matchup against Iran. So everybody listening to this knows the results. What was the score of U.S.-Iran, Brandon?
And we 1-0 USA.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.